said, waggling a finger for emphasis. But he's stubborn, and he's always looking for an excuse to eat fancy. You'll be around for the honoring of moving fire, won't you?
With a clear effort, Shikoa brought his eyes and attention back to her.
Of course, he said, giving her a faint smile.
Will you?
Wouldn't miss it for the galaxy,
Fink promised.
I'll see you in a couple of days, then.
Stepping close, she wrapped her arms around him, making sure not to pin his right arm, and pressed herself against his chest.
I had a wonderful day,
she murmured into his neck.
Thanks for everything.
His first reflex was to go stiff with surprise. His next, a fraction of a second later, was to start to relax and enjoy her touch. His third, an even shorter fraction of a second after that, was to remember he was on duty, and gently but firmly push her away. And in and among all those reactions, she finally tracked down the scent she'd noticed earlier.
I'll see you then, he said,
his hands on her shoulders as he held her at arm's length. For a moment he gazed at her, then turned and disappeared into the crowd. Bink turned too, and headed for the gate. So, along with not trusting her, which he certainly shouldn't, Shikoa had decided to go all cute on her. The smell she'd picked up had been tracking dye, an invisible coating of stain that would leave indelible splotches on wandering fingers that would blaze into view under ultraviolet light. Not surprisingly, Shikoa suspected that her rapt attention was solely so that she could get hold of the key pendant on the choker chain around his neck, and he intended to have proof of her guilt if and when she made a grab for it. Simple, diabolical, and virtually foolproof. Bink smiled to herself. In some ways, she almost felt sorry for him. Almost.
The grand finale was in full swing. The thundering corkscrews of water roiling and cascading over the cheering crowd, filling the Marblewood grounds. The sparkles and glitters in the streams flashed and glowed and erupted, foreshadowing the huge fireworks display that would highlight the honoring of moving fire at the conclusion of the festival in 2 days. The fountains and tendrils leapt halfway to the sky, shot out to the sides and back in again, all of it carefully controlled and contained by the shifting repulsor fields that ensured that not a single drop fell on the audience below. Standing on the presentation balcony, drinking in the noise and sights, Villachor permitted himself a moment of quiet gloating. So Quirv and his secret organization were dragging their feet, were they? Hoping, no doubt, that the temptation of their cryodex, combined with the pressure from Kazadi, would force him into a swamp from which there was only a single means of escape. Theirs. But they were wrong. So was Kazadi. Villachor didn't have to choose between the known power and ruthlessness of Black Sun and the ambiguous power and freedom of Quirv and his group of unknowns, because there was, in fact, a third route. A path that neither of them would ever dream he might travel. For that matter, he wasn't convinced himself that he wanted to travel it, let alone that he needed to. But options were life, and this was a path that basic caution insisted he at least explore. He waited until the very climax of the water show, then virtually all eyes and thoughts across Iltar City were focused on his presentation, and the similar ones at the other festival venues. Then he pulled out his comlink and punched in a number. It took Danal Kusiv nearly half a minute to answer, probably busy watching a similar ceremony at one of the other venues across town.
Kusiv?
Avrak Villachor. Villachor identified himself. You may remember our conversation of a few days ago.
The silence was just long enough to confirm that Kusiv did indeed remember that awkward, embarrassing, painful session. Villachor had seen blackmail victims respond with fury, embarrassment, and terror, but he'd never seen one who had left Marblewood so completely and hopelessly broken. Kazadi had speculated at the time that Kusiv would simply go home and kill himself, though the Fallen hadn't sounded like he really cared one way or the other.
Villachor had reminded him that suicide was a shameful act in Wukar culture, and that Kusiv would never add such additional debasement to his name. So far, Villachor was right.
I remember,
Kusiv said, his voice strained but steady. Apparently, he'd made peace with his situation, and had resigned himself to the fact that he'd be spending the rest of his life beneath Black Sun's hammer.
What do you want?
Something quite small, I assure you, Villachor said. I've heard that a member of the Imperial Court is in Iltar City. I want everything you have on him. His name, his precise rank and position, his means of arrival, his current location, and the best way to contact him privately.
There was another pause. Across the grounds, a giant water spout formed, then split into five branches, each with its own color of flashing sparkles.
What are you going to do to him?
Kusiv asked at last.
That's not your concern, Villachor told him. You just get me the information.
He heard Kusiv sigh even over the crowd.
You want it tonight, I suppose.
Tomorrow will be soon enough. Just make sure it's accurate.
Everything I do is accurate,
Kusiv said, professional pride momentarily eclipsing his shame and resentment.
Good, Villachor said. Tomorrow, then.
He closed down the comlink and put it away, permitting himself a small smile. Yes, Kurv might think his cryodex was the ultimate lure. Kazadi might think Black Sun was the ultimate threat. But there was another hand in this game. A hand that almost certainly would outlast them both. Because if it came down to life or death, Villachor could do worse than abandon Black Sun, bring his knowledge of the organization to the Imperials, and see what kind of protection they could give him. It was time to see what sort of bargain Lord Vader would be willing to offer.
Chapter 16.
The recording of the comlink conversation ended, and Deja looked up from his datapad.
You must be joking, he said flatly. He must be joking.
It does sound like a joke, doesn't it?
Tushul replied thoughtfully.
But if it's not, this could be the beginning of the end for Black Sun. A sector chief like Villachor will know all sorts of dirty secrets. And if he can bring Azadi's blackmail files with him...
He raised his eyebrows.
Maybe, Deja said warily, staring down at the datapad. It couldn't be this easy.
There was a hidden claw in this somewhere.
I noticed that for all the words he spouted, there's a distinct lack of any solid statements or promises.
Which isn't unreasonable for someone who's merely testing the waters.
Or someone angling for a one-sided deal. This could also be a ploy to get us looking in the wrong direction.
Possible,
Dushul agreed.
But whatever's going on, we have to treat it as if it's a genuine offer.
He smiled tightly.
If only because the deeper we get into whatever scheme he's working on, the more of it we'll see, and the better our chances of turning it back on him.
Unless the scheme is to draw out and kill a couple of intelligence officers, Deja warned.
I never said I actually trusted the man,
Dushul said with a shrug.
I've already sent the recall order to Captain Worven. He and the Dominator should be here by nightfall.
And then?
Dushul pursed his lips.
Given that Villachor still doesn't know about the connection between us, I'm thinking it might be time for the two of you to have a face-to-face. Possibly as part of the Glitterstim scam you've already set up.
Deja thought it over.
Maybe. Though that might bump into whatever Inger and his team are up to.
Dushul snorted.
Ha! If Villachor comes over, we'll have no need of Inger and his collection of scoundrels.
If Villachor is just blowing soap bubbles, we might,
Deja countered. Dushul waved a hand.
You're the agent on the ground, Whatever you want to do about Inger, I won't second-guess you.
Thank you, Deja said. D'Shul was right, of course. This was Deja's mission, with D'Shul only along for support and camouflage. All decisions were ultimately his. So were the consequences of those decisions.
Who are you calling?
D'Shul asked, as Deja pulled out his comlink. Inger, Deja said, keying for echo to D'Shul's comlink and then punching in the number.
I can't believe Villachor just woke up this morning and decided he was tired of working for Black Sun. If he's being pushed, maybe Inger's team is doing the pushing. It might be a good idea to find out what exactly they've been up to.
The comlink made the connection.
Yes,
Inger said.
It's Deja.
Deja identified himself.
Can you talk?
Just a moment.
The comlink went dead for a moment, then came back on.
All right, I'm clear,
Inger said, his voice gone quiet.
I'm calling for an update, Deja said, and to deliver a possible warning.
What kind of warning?
You first, Deja said.
As far as I can tell, the plan's moving along properly. There's some talk about trying to push Villachor into moving the files elsewhere on Wukar. But I can't see him panicking enough to go to that route. Failing that, we'll have to go ahead and break into the vault.
I see,
Deja said, smiling grimly to himself. So that was the angle Villachor was playing.
The Honor Ring should certainly provide enough distractions for a job like that.
You don't know the half of it. Now what's this about a warning?
Villachor may be trying to do an end sweep around you, Deja said. He's been making overtures to a member of the Imperial Court who's currently in town. If he actually decides to defect, whatever lure or press you're prodding him with will suddenly become irrelevant. When that happens, you and your team may be in trouble.
I see,
Inger said slowly.
Thank you for the heads up. When will you know whether or not that's going to happen?
So far, they're in the very preliminary verbal dance, Deja said. If anything changes, I'll let you know.
I'd appreciate that. Gotta go. I'll talk to you later.
The connection broke.
Interesting,
D'Shul said, lowering his own comlink.
Indeed, Deja agreed. And suddenly Villachor's offer has a whole second threat attached.
He's thinking about moving the files, all right,
D'Shul said.
But he knows better than to move them without adequate security.
Deja nodded.
And what better security than a full Imperial escort?
What better security indeed,
D'Shul agreed.
So he pretends to defect, has us escort some trivial equipment or personal items elsewhere, and then suddenly changes his mind.
And since there's no way he can do that without Kazadi misinterpreting his move and taking his head off halfway along, Deja added, it follows that Kazadi is also in on the plan.
So the files get moved and secured, and Inger's team is left empty-handed. And as a bonus for Black Sun, a couple of intelligence agents are tagged.
And possibly dealt with in their traditional pleasant manner, Deja said sourly. So much for Inger's approach.
So it would seem. Question is, do you restart yours?
Deja tapped at his lip. I suppose I have to. If Villachor is really planning to defect, it doesn't make much sense to muddy the water further. But if it's just a scam to get us to do the heavy lifting for him, then we'll still need a vector into Marblewood.
And you'll need it before he moves the files,
D'Shul warned.
Because wherever he gets us to take them, he'll be ready to spirit them away to some other location where we'll never find them.
Unless we can take them en route, like Inger was obviously hoping to, Deja pointed out. But he'll have thought of that, too.
Absolutely.
D'Shul eyed him.
So?
So I guess I'll be attending the honoring of Moving Fire at Marblewood tomorrow, Deja said, heaving himself out of his chair. Better go put together another sample package to wave under Villachor's nose.
You've got a day to think about how you want to tailor your approach,
Deshaw reminded him.
Then don't forget, the Dominator will be here by then. If you need backup, it'll be available.
Only if we want to blow the entire operation. Deshaw shrugged.
If it comes to that point, the operation will already be blown. Better a dead operation and a live operative than the alternative.
You have such a soothing way of putting things, Deja said dryly. You'll be wanting me to attend you during lunch, I assume?
If you have time, Deshaw said. If not, I can explain your absence.
No. We need to keep up appearances, Deja said. I'll see you for lunch.
What was that all about?
Bink called across the conversation room. Standing framed by the window and the cityscape beyond, Inger turned to face her.
Sorry?
That call, Bink said.
She started to point at the comlink he was putting away, apparently remembered in time that she'd already pulled out stitches from two of the seams Winter was laboriously trying to finish, and nodded instead toward the comlink.
It was my contact, Inger said. He wanted to warn me that...
You're telling your contact about our plans?
Bink interrupted.
He already knows,
Inger said patiently.
He's the one who told us about Kazadi and the blackmail files in the first place, remember? Anyway, he wanted to warn me that Villachor may be getting in some more Zed police droids.
Bink looked down at Winter, and Winter could see the uneasiness in her eyes.
How many?
Bink asked.
And how soon?
Winter added.
He didn't know,
Inger said.
He's not even sure Villachor's actually getting them, or whether he's just thinking about getting them. He'll let me know if he hears anything more.
He gestured down the hall.
I'm going to the kitchen. Either of you want anything?
No, thanks. Me neither,
Winter said.
Okay.
Inger hesitated.
Let me know if there's anything I can help with.
He left the room.
A few extra Zeds aren't going to hurt the plan, are they?
Winter asked.
They shouldn't,
Bink said, but she didn't sound 100% convinced.
One Zed or 50, they all work off the same master control system.
Winter nodded. She'd assumed that was the case, and was pretty sure Han had it covered, but he'd been keeping his cards pretty close to his vest, especially since the kidnapping. And she wasn't absolutely sure how or where he might be tweaking his plans. Inger, from what she'd been able to glean, was even more in the dark than she was. On the other hand, if Inger was babbling freely about their plans to this unknown contact, it was probably just as well Han wasn't telling him much.
I haven't had a chance to talk to Tavia lately,
Winter said, as she studied the seam she was working on. She had no idea what kind of eye for detail Shakoa had, but better to be safe than sorry.
Is she doing all right?
She's fine,
Bink said.
You sure?
Winter pressed, moving on to the next seam. This one, she knew, had to be a little crooked if it was going to match the one on the other dress.
She seemed pretty tired when I saw her at dinner last night.
Tired, but happy,
Bink assured her.
Sitting around putting electronics together is what she lives for. Even when it's the very same electronics, like now, being put together the same way over and over. Boring, if you ask me. But hey, differences are what make the galaxy spin, right?
So I've heard,
Winter agreed.
It does sound like she prefers the quiet life, though.
Bink was silent long enough for Winter to finish with that seam and go on to the next one.
I gather she's been talking to you,
she said at last.
Interesting. She must like you.
She doesn't open up to just anyone. I suppose she's been telling you how much I enjoy the whole ghost thief lifestyle, and how I'm never content to stick to anything else for long?
Winter hesitated.
She said you're very good at what you do,
she said, deciding on the diplomatic approach.
We discussed a little about how people usually enjoy the things they're good at. And I suppose she told you how good she is at electronics. None of us needs to be told that,
Winter said, hoping to deflect the conversation with a little humor.
We've all seen what she can do.
Oh, she's good at her work, all right,
Bink said.
What she's not so good at is realizing just how nasty the universe around her really is.
Winter frowned up at her. There was a deadly serious expression on the young woman's face, one that Winter hadn't seen there before.
I don't follow.
Let me give you an example,
Bink said, an edge of bitterness in her voice.
I assume she told you about the Revordak Electronics Company?
Not by name.
It's the one she usually trots out as an example of me scuttling every decent thing that comes into her life,
Bink said.
The pay was good, the boss was happy with her performance, and she really enjoyed the work. On the surface, it seemed perfect.
So what was wrong with it?
Winter asked.
Did they drink their soup too loudly?
What was wrong was that the place didn't exist,
Bink said heavily.
Or at least the place she thought she was working at didn't exist. The whole operation was nothing but a front for one of the Hutt syndicates. They were funneling spice, smuggled weapons, even slaves through the business. The whole thing prettified by innocents like Tavia.
Winter winced. She'd seen plenty of operations like that while scoping out likely places for the Alliance to hit.
You could have told her.
I could have,
Bink agreed with a sigh.
Maybe I should have. But she's so innocent that... Look, I'm sure you've figured out by now that I have enough cynicism for both of us. Probably would have enough if we'd been triplets. I just don't want her to become like me.
I understand,
Winter said. And oddly enough, she realized that she genuinely did. She and Princess Leia had both had the same youthful innocence wrenched from their souls by the struggle against the Empire.
I want her to be happy, Winter,
Bink went on earnestly.
I really do. But I also want her to eat regularly, and I don't mean in a Kessel prison cafeteria. Until we have enough to set her up someplace safe.
She shrugged.
I have to keep doing this.
She seemed to suddenly come to herself.
Sorry. Did I pull out any of the seams just then?
No, you're fine,
Winter assured her.
But don't do it again.
Right,
Bink said. The darker mood had vanished, and she was back to her old cheerful self.
Sorry.
The room once again fell silent. Winter settled back to work, pondering how the universe could look so different to two so similar sets of eyes. Wondering, too, if this would be the score Bink and Tavia were both hoping for. The score that would finally give them freedom. Or whether tomorrow would be the last day they would ever have together.
Chapter 17.
The morning had dawned in full, cloudless sunshine, with all indications of a glorious day ahead. A few white clouds had made an appearance around noon, but they'd cleared out by early afternoon. Now, with the sun nearly to the horizon, and the sky to the east already starting to darken, there was every indication that the fireworks that would bring the festival of four honorings to an end would play out against a full, starry background.
It was, Han thought, a good day to make 163 million credits. It would not be such a good day to walk away empty-handed. It would be a really bad day to get shot. He scowled as he strode along with the cheerfully jabbering crowds, listening to them ooh and ah at the flame spurts and fire tornadoes whipping across the air above the Marblewood grounds. His mood had been all over the charts today, ranging from the insanely optimistic right down to the frozen fear that they were heading into catastrophic failure. Right now, as he walked toward the mansion framed by the taller city buildings beyond it,
His mood was hovering near the really bad feeling end of the scale.
Which didn't make any sense.
He'd done everything he could. The equipment was ready. He'd been through every detail of the plan, and through skill or plain dumb luck, he'd managed to assemble the perfect team to pull this off.
Maybe that was the problem.
Maybe the team was too good. Aside from the overall planning, there wasn't really much for Han himself to do. Once he delivered the specially prepared data card to Villachor, in fact, his part was going to be over. He would go back to the suite, sit down in a comfy chair by the window, and watch it all unfold below him through electrobinoculars. He would have all the waiting, all the stress and worry, and none of the action. He scowled a little harder. He'd been the one at the helm when he and Chewie did the Kessel Run. He was the one in the gun turret when there were pirates or mercenaries that needed to be shot off the Falcon's back. And even though he'd spent most of that Yavin thing sitting quietly with the sun at his back, he'd known that if and when the time came, he would be the one who came blazing in to shoot those determined TIE fighters off Luke's tail. Sitting around and waiting while someone else had all the fun wasn't what he was used to. But for once in his life, he would have to settle for that. As usual, Villachor wasn't hard to find. All Han had to do was look for the spot with the most elaborate fire displays and figure out which way people were going when they weren't looking at the fire or heading toward the food and drink pavilions. Like most of the big shots Han had known, and pretty much all of the crime bosses, Villachor liked to be fawned over. Sure enough, the man and his two bodyguards were hanging out at the edge of a crowd that was mostly staring in open-mouthed fascination at a fire fountain that seemed to be matching precisely the flow and movements of the water fountain that had been there 2 days earlier. A nice trick, Han had to admit, as he waited for the line of well-wishers surrounding Villachor to thin out. Finally, there was a lull.
"Ah,"
Villachor said as Han walked up to him, his voice sounding a little odd.
"I wondered if you'd show up."
"I said I would,"
Han reminded him.
"I brought you..."
He broke off as one of the guards stepped around behind him and something hard pressed suddenly against his side. A second later, the other guard had joined his buddy, and both of Han's arms were being tightly held. Han looked at the men, then at Villachor.
"You're kidding."
Villachor's lip twitched.
"Quietly, if you please," he said.
Turning, he headed toward one of the service doors of the mansion, the bodyguards and Han following. Han didn't spot any of the other security men along the way. Apparently, Villachor wanted this kept quiet even from his own people. The reason for that quickly became clear. Waiting a few meters inside the door were three Fallen. The one in the middle was dressed in an elaborate layered robe with a long tooled sash. Probably the Kazadi character Inger had mentioned, especially since the two Fallen flanking him had the hard-edged looks of bodyguards. For the first half second, Han thought about trying to get in the first word. Decided calm silence would be the better way to play this one. Probably just as well, since Kazadi clearly wanted that first word for himself.
"There he is," he said before the door had even closed behind the little group. "The human who in arrogance and pride thinks he can subvert a Black Sun official from his foreign loyalties."
Han looked at Villachor. The other's expression was steady enough, but there was sweat on his forehead.
"I'm just an employee, Master Kazadi,"
Han said, turning back to the Fallen.
"I'm not allowed to have arrogance and pride. I just deliver messages."
"Perhaps I should deliver a message of my own," Kazadi suggested calmly. "Your body, for example, shredded into small bits of flesh and bone. Would such a communication be a clear enough message of the cost of challenging us?"
Han swallowed. He could feel his heart racing as the fear flowing through him edged rapidly toward panic. It was the Fallen's pheromones, he knew, that were driving that emotion. But knowing that didn't do a bit of good.
"I'm sure there are better ways to get what you want,"
he said, keeping his voice as calm as he could.
"What I want?"
Kazadi asked, raising his eyebrows in feigned surprise.
"What makes you think I want anything?" Except your death, and the death of everyone in your organization. The fact that you're talking and not shooting.
Han lifted his hands, about all the gesturing he could do with Villachor's bodyguard still holding his arms.
So?
Kazadi smiled thinly.
He is indeed a clever one, Master Villachor. Very well. I want the Cryodex.
Even knowing that would be Kazadi's demand, Han still felt a fresh ripple of fear run through him.
And in return?
He asked, knowing what the Falling's answer would be to that one, too. He was right.
A quick death,
Kazadi said.
Or depending on what you can tell me about your people and your assets, there is a very slim chance that you may in fact walk out of Marblewood with your life intact.
Sounds like a reasonable deal,
Han said.
I'll need to call my contact.
Kazadi made a small gesture, and the guards released Han's arms. Pulling out his comlink, he punched in Lando's number. Lando wasn't going to like this. Not one bit.
But why take him inside?
Rochelle asked worriedly, her electrobinoculars pressed to her face as she stood by the conversation room window.
All he had to do was deliver a data card. Why couldn't they do that outside?
Maybe Villachor wanted privacy,
Lando said, wondering if it sounded as lame to the others as it did to him. It did.
Since when?
Winter countered. Her voice was under better control than Rochelle's, but Lando could hear the same concern.
Up to now, he's always preferred keeping us outside whenever possible. Changing that pattern is a bad sign.
Easy, Lando cautioned. Han's a big boy. Whatever Villachor's got in mind, I'm sure he can talk his way out of it.
At his side, his comlink signaled. Lando pulled it out and clicked it on.
Yes?
Hey, Quirv.
Han's voice was just a little too casual.
Got a situation here.
What kind of a situation?
Lando asked, beckoning to the others as he keyed the comlink speaker to wide focus.
I'm at a meeting with Master Kazadi. He'd like to see our cryodex.
Uh-oh. You mean he wants to see it work?
Lando asked carefully.
Yeah, something like that. I think it would be in our best interest to show it to him.
Lando glanced at the others gathered around him. Rochelle and Tavia looked stricken. Winter looked controlled and calculating. Dozer looked jumpy. Chewbacca looked ready to go on a rampage. And Inger... Lando frowned. Inger looked oddly guilty. What exactly could Inger have to look guilty about?
I can ask the boss, Lando said into the comlink. He'd have to be shown there would be a decent payoff for it.
Let's just say there'll be some pretty nasty payoff if he doesn't.
For an instant, Lando flashed back to that awkward scene on Nar Shaddaa, back after the Elysian fiasco, when he'd been so mad at Han that he'd threatened to put a blaster bolt into his friend's head. Han tended to spark that kind of reaction in people. But Lando had spoken in the heat of rage and frustration and betrayal. Kazadi's threat was cold and calculated, and very, very serious.
I'll tell him, Lando promised. I'll get back to you as soon as I have his answer.
Make it quick. Master Kazadi doesn't strike me as the patient type.
Got it, Lando said. I'll get back to you soon.
He clicked off.
Well, that's made the day more interesting, he commented. Many thoughts?
Chewbacca warbled threateningly.
Of course we get him out, Rochelle agreed tightly. I think the question is how.
Actually, the first question is why. As in why the bottom has suddenly fallen out of this thing,
Lando said.
Inger, you got something to say?
Inger started.
What do you mean?
You got a call from your contact yesterday,
Winter said.
Did he say anything about this?
Inger swallowed hard.
I...
He stopped.
I mean...
Chewbacca took a step toward him. Inger twitched back, then seemed to shrink in on himself.
I'm sorry,
he said, almost too low for Lando to hear.
Oh, I didn't think... He mentioned that Villachor had been making overtures to the Imperials.
And you didn't think this was worth telling us about?
Tavia bit out.
Blast it, Inger! If he makes a deal with the imps, we've got no hold over him. He can play us without ever having to put any chips in the pot, knowing he's got a pass if his hand doesn't pan out.
I know,
Inger said, looking even more pained.
I just didn't think anything could happen this quickly, that's all.
I guess it did, Dozer said heavily. So now what?
You heard Chewie and Rochelle, Lando said. We get him out.
How?
Dozer retorted.
Somehow,
Lando said with strained patience, his mind scrambling for a plan.
Winter, are there any other weapons caches lying around town we could raid?
There are two that I know of,
Winter said.
But anything small enough to be smuggled in through the gates wouldn't be nearly powerful enough to get through the mansion's doors, walls, or windows.
Not to mention all the security men, Dozer pointed out.
The umbrella shield will have to be shut down for the grand fireworks display later, Rochelle pointed out. Maybe we could get something big enough to breach the wall from up here.
We can't wait that long, Lando said. I don't know how much patience Kazari has, but I doubt it's going to last more than an hour or so.
Inger cleared his throat.
I have an idea,
he said hesitantly.
Winter, how accurately did you duplicate the other cryodecks?
Completely,
Winter said.
I mean, really accurately.
What part of completely don't you get?
Lando growled.
No, I understand,
Inger said.
I was just thinking, if we let Kazadi see the cryodecks, and if he's seen Azeel's enough times up close...
He paused, looking around expectantly. Rochelle got it first.
He'll think it's Azeel's,
she said.
And that Azeel...
No.
Would he?
What, think Azeel's behind Lando's bid to get the blackmail files?
Winter asked.
Sure, why not?
She's right,
Tavia agreed.
If he suspects Villachor of possible treason, why not Azeel?
Playing the corners against each other,
Lando agreed. Inger might be onto something here.
So if we can convince Kazadi that Azeel is a traitor...
He won't just let Han go,
Tavia said slowly.
But he'll definitely figure he's worth more alive than dead.
Especially if he thinks Han can fill in the details of Azeel's plan,
Rochelle added.
It should at least buy us some time. Azeel's plan, Rochelle added. It should at least buy us some time.
Chewbacca rumbled a warning.
Good point, Lando agreed grimly. It only works until Azeel shows up at Marblewood with the real cryodecks.
Which means we have to get to Azeel right now and steal the real one,
Rochelle said.
What about the guards and the window alarms?
Dozer objected.
We'll just have to take the risk, Rochelle said. If Villachor sees the two cryodexes together, Han is dead. Tavia, do you think Bink can pull it off?
I don't know,
Tavia said, her face screwed up in thought.
This fast and before full dark? I don't think so. But if it's the only way, I know she'll be game to try.
If we pull her out now, we may lose our chance at Villachor's vault,
Winter warned, picking up the electrobinoculars and going back to the window.
Han's worth more than all the files in the galaxy,
Rochelle called after her. She sent a quick glare at Inger.
And all the credits, too.
Let's not make it an either-or just yet, Lando said. Winter, can you see her?
Yes,
Winter said, shaking her head.
Sorry. She's already hooked up with Shakoa. If we pull her out now, especially with him probably already suspicious, it's over.
Unless we could get her back in time,
Dozer said.
Not a chance,
Tavia said.
Which leaves only one other shot,
Winter continued calmly.
Dozer and I don't have anything else to do right now. We'll go to the Lulina Crown and keep Azeel there.
Whoa,
Dozer said, his eyes going wide.
Us against... No, not a chance.
Relax,
Winter said.
I'm not suggesting we hammer him and his collection of bodyguards. We just have to keep him locked down in his suite at the hotel.
Oh, yeah, that'll work,
Dozer said sarcastically.
He wouldn't have a comm link or anything he could call Kazadi with. Not a chance.
Hang on, Lando said, the first bit of hope stirring inside him.
Winter's right. Calling Kazadi doesn't do Azeel any good. Of course he'll say he still has the Cryodex, but he'd say that whether he did or didn't.
So how do you pin someone in his room? Rochelle asked.
I don't know yet, Lando said. Let's run a quick inventory of what we've got on hand and see if we can come up with a plan.
Unless you're still too afraid of the Falling to do this,
Rochelle added to Dozer, an edge of challenge in her voice. Dozer flashed a glance at Winter's back and squared his shoulders.
Let's find a workable plan first, he said. As far as gear goes, I've got some vehicle remotes, some universal door to crypt openers.
Excuse me,
Winter said, still standing at the window.
Any of you know if Han smokes?
Not that I know of, Lando said, frowning. Chewie?
Chewbacca rumbled a negative.
Maybe a long time ago, but not lately, Lando said. Why?
Because I think, Winter said thoughtfully, he may just have sent us a message.
Han keyed off the comlink. As he started to put it away, one of the guards plucked it out of his hand.
Okay, I sent the message, Han said to Kazadi. I guess we wait.
Yes, Kazadi said. We shall hope your superior considers you more valuable than his cryodex. He smiled thinly. Especially since underlings are so much more easily replaced than rare artifacts.
Not the good ones,
Han countered, looking back at Villachor. The man was about 2 paces away. It should work.
I suppose I'm going to be your guest for a while.
A short while only,
Kazadi said. His eyes flicked to Villachor's bodyguards.
You two, escort him to the guards' quarters across from my suite. The closet there is lockable. Put him inside.
Manning could take him, Villachor said firmly. Tom will stay with me.
They'll both take him, Kazadi said.
For a second, he and Villachor locked eyes. And in that second, Han made his move. The bodyguards were still gripping his upper arms, but both forearms were free. Giving his left shoulder a little hunch as a distraction, Han dipped his right hand into his side pocket and got a grip on the data card there. In a single smooth motion, he drew it out and flipped it toward Villachor. He had just enough time to see Villachor reflexively reach up and catch it before the two bodyguards yanked him backward and slammed him down onto the floor.
Take it easy,
Han said hastily, wincing with the sudden pain in his shoulders as the whole room seemed to sprout blasters.
It's just a delivery from my boss. I was ordered to give the card to Master Villachor.
For a long moment, no one moved. Out of the corner of his eye, Han could see Villachor turning the data card over in his hands.
What is it?
Kazadi asked.
The details of his offer,
Han said.
Not that it matters now, I suppose.
I never said I was going to join you, Villachor insisted, tossing the card back at Han as if he were getting rid of a baby Gundark.
Han gave a little shrug.
Like I said, I was ordered to deliver it.
For a few more heartbeats, no one moved or spoke. Han held his breath, and then Kazadi stirred and gave Han a small smile.
I admire a man who spends his last breath carrying out his orders, he said. Let him up.
The hands pinning Han's arm to the floor reversed direction, pulling him upright again.
And I'll take that data card, the Falling added,
almost as if it was an afterthought.
Digrig? One of Kazadi's guards retrieved the data card and handed it to his boss.
You have your orders,
Kazadi continued, eyeing the card thoughtfully.
Sir?
One of Villachor's bodyguards asked.
Yes, go ahead, Manning,
Villachor said with a hint of a sigh.
Tob, go with him. Move,
Manning growled in Han's ear as the hands tightened around his arms again. His breath carried a hint of tobacco. Apparently, the man was a cigar smoker. They led him down a long hallway and up three flights of steps to the fourth floor. Along the way, Han noted with some interest they passed exactly one other person, an older man in a chef's outfit, hurrying toward the kitchen area. Apparently, all of Villachor's people were either outside or on duty in the mansion's various working areas.
Where are we going?
Han asked, glancing up at the skylights above him as they headed down the corridor into the northeast wing.
You heard his excellency,
Taub growled.
Yeah, a closet in his guard's room.
Han looked sideways at Manning.
I don't suppose you could give me a cigar to help pass the time.
Manning snorted.
Yeah, sure.
No, really, Han pressed. I really need one. I know you smoke. I can smell it on you. Come on, give me a break. I really need it.
You really need a smoke?
Letting go of Han's arm, Manning took a long step forward and fell into step beside him, pulling a long, thin cigar from his pocket.
Like this one?
Watch it,
Taub warned.
Kazadi's not going to like it if you get smoke in his rooms.
I won't,
Manning assured him. He lit the cigar and puffed out some smoke.
Smoke like this?
He asked Han, puffing out another cloud.
Yeah, like that,
he said, straining against Taub's grip as he tried to get closer to the twisting tendrils of smoke, hoping he could mask his actual disgust for the stuff.
Come on, let me at least smell it.
Because I'd be in real trouble if I gave you anything,
Manning continued, walking backward as he inhaled more smoke and puffed it back at Han, always keeping just far enough away that Han could only get a whiff from the edge of each cloud before it drifted up to the ceiling.
Especially a cigar, especially in Kazadi's suite.
Come on,
Han pleaded. He could practically feel his nose hairs curling as he inhaled the smoke, and his lungs were hovering on the edge of a violent coughing fit. But he had to make this look real if he wanted Manning to keep up the game.
Enough, Taub snapped. Come on, we're too close as it is.
Relax,
Manning soothed. He gave one final puff, and then slipped a cap on the cigar to extinguish it.
I'll save the rest for later,
he said, dropping it back into his pocket.
Enjoy the memories.
He stopped at an open door and gestured inside.
In here.
Sure,
Han said. Winter and Rochelle would be up in their suite right now, keeping a close eye on the mansion and grounds, and an odd pattern of smoke puffs in one of the skylights should be just the sort of thing one of them might notice. Or they might miss it completely. But if they did spot it, they might figure out that Han was pointing them to the part of the mansion where he was being taken. It was a long shot, but sometimes long shots paid off. The room they ushered him into was surprisingly large, equipped with a small table and four chairs, a couple of floor lights, and six beds spaced around the living area. Guards' quarters, all right. Furnished for men or Fallen who would use the room for little except sleeping. Manning led the way across to a wide door on the side wall that had an oversized keypad beside it. He punched in a simple code. 1, 2, 3, and the door slid open to reveal a large walk-in closet. Taub walked Han over to it and gave him a shove inside.
You've got to be kidding,
Han protested as he regained his balance and looked around. No clothing, no storage boxes. The closet was completely bare except for a couple of long hanging rods along the side walls, some movable shelves, and about a dozen hangers.
How about you at least give me one of those chairs?
How about we don't?
Taub said, giving the closet a quick once-over of his own, and then backing out.
Enjoy your stay. We'll be back when Master Villager calls for you.
Most likely when Master Kazadi calls,
Han called as the door slid shut.
He seems to be the one running things now.
There was no comment from either of them. Han hadn't really expected one. The closet was pitch dark, but Han had spotted a switch by the door on his way in. He tapped it, and a set of soft lights went on along the closet's upper edges. He spent the next couple of minutes looking around the room, hoping there might be something useful that he'd missed on his first sweep, but there was still nothing. The hangers were high-class types, polished hardwood with chrome hooks, marginally useful as clubs, but nothing that would do any good against a heavy wooden door. The shelves and clothing rods were the same polished hardwood, again not offering much in the way of escape material. The walls and floor were also hardwood, a different kind from the shelving, but just as solid. The ceiling. Han looked up. The ceiling looked to be made of some kind of ceramic. But back when Rochelle had been talking about the vault, she'd mentioned a gap between the ceiling and the floor above it. If the same design was in play up here, that ceiling shouldn't be supporting any weight, and might not be all that thick. And if the between floor gap was big enough for him to fit into... It took a couple of minutes to take down the shelves and set them up against the sidewalls, angled from floor to ceiling in opposite directions to create a sort of makeshift scaffold. Picking up the sturdiest looking of the wooden hangers, he climbed up onto the shelves and gave the ceiling an experimental tap. Nothing happened. He tapped a little harder, then a little harder, wondering if the noise was going to draw unwelcome attention. But no one rushed in. He kept at it, until finally, with a medium-hard tap, the hanger broke through the ceramic. He'd been right. The material wasn't very thick. Working along the spiderweb of cracks radiating outward from the impact point, it broke off enough to make a 20-centimeter opening. He climbed the rest of the way up his scaffolding and eased his head through. There was a between-floor gap, all right. Unfortunately, it was no more than 20 or 30 centimeters deep, with a narrower framing above the closet door. Bink might have been able to get through, especially with proper climbing gear, but there was no way Han was going to.
But if he could tear away enough of the ceiling outside the closet, he might be able to use one of the clothing poles to work the keypad and open the door. The 123 code Manning had punched in was probably a default setting and would be easy enough to duplicate. Climbing back down, he moved his scaffolding to a spot right in front of the door and got to work.
From everything Deja had read in the visitor brochures, the honoring of moving fire was the climax of the festival, the day when the various venues around the planet worked the hardest to outdo each other. Someday, Deja decided, he would have to take time to come here and actually watch it. But today wasn't that day. Today he had eyes only for the crowd wandering the Marblewood grounds. There were 11 people on Inger's team, he knew. Peeking in from their balcony 9 days earlier, he'd seen them all in their suite's conversation room. And though he'd seen one of the women only from behind, he'd had clear views of all the others' faces. Today, right now, was their last and best chance to breach Villachor's mansion and get into his vault. They should be here, ready to play their parts in whatever scheme Inger had come up with. He'd already spotted three of them. Two of them, the team's youngest human male and the shifty-eyed Balasar, seemed to have the same job, to stroll around and surreptitiously attach something beneath the flame-patterned gowns of the various serving and maintenance droids. Restraining bolts, Deja guessed, or possibly small detonite charges. The third team member, a black-haired young woman, dressed in a long and vibrant red gown, had attached herself to Shikoa, the Marblewood security chief. She obviously was setting up to be the diversion. So where in the blazes were the other eight? Off to his left, a sudden geyser of blue-yellow flame burst up toward the sky, sending a wave of warmth across the assembled crowd. Deja gave the fountain an absent-minded look, then changed direction and headed toward the drink pavilions. The sun was just about down, with full darkness and the climactic fireworks display maybe an hour and a half away. He would give Inger the first hour to make his move, he decided. After that, if there was still nothing happening, he would go find Villachor and try to pick up the threads of his original penetration plan. In the meantime, the Marblewood food and drink pavilions were still impressively stocked. He might as well take advantage of that. The room just outside the door was as easy to break through as the closet ceiling had been, though Han winced at each snap and crack that the ceramic made as the pieces came loose. He could see that the room door was partially open, and was mildly surprised that no one out there had noticed the noise he was making. Still, as he'd already noted, most of Villachor's people were busy elsewhere. That, plus the noise of the crowd and the show outside, was apparently enough to cover his activities. The first snag came when he realized that the clothing poles were too long to maneuver through the holes into the between floors gap and down through the hole outside the door. They also stubbornly refused to break, even when he angled one of them against the wall and jumped on it. But there were still the fancy hangers. By hooking them together, he was able to make a flexible chain long enough to dangle through the opening and tap against the keypad. Not that it was easy. It took a multitude of attempts and more patience than Han thought he had. But in the end, he got the door open. Luckily, the main room was still empty. Holding one of the hangers ready like a club, a small part of his mind recognizing how ridiculous such a weapon would be against knives, neuronic whips, and blasters, he crossed the room and eased a look outside, and found himself well and truly blocked. 15 meters down the hallway, standing on opposite sides of one of the doors, were the two Faline bodyguards he'd seen earlier. Evidently, Khazad-dûm was the one person in Iltar City who wasn't outside watching Villachor's fire show. Mouthing a curse, he eased back from the door. Okay, so he was trapped in here. But that wouldn't last forever. As soon as Lando showed up with their fake cryodex, Khazad-dûm would surely go downstairs to take a look. Where Khazad-dûm went, the bodyguards would also go. And with the rest of Villachor's people out and about, once the Faline were gone, Han basically should have free run of the mansion. Assuming Lando did indeed bring the cryodex.
Get this through your head, Solo.
Lando's angry words whispered through his memory.
We've been friends of the past, so I'm not gonna do what you so richly deserve and blow your head off. But don't ever come near me again.
Lando had told him earlier that he'd cooled down since that rant, that he'd grudgingly realized Han hadn't stiffed him on purpose. Given their long history together, Han had accepted the ceasefire as genuine. But what if it wasn't? What if the not-quite-apology had simply been the words Lando figured he had to say in order to get a shot at Inger's 163 million credits? In that case, all Lando had to do was stick with the original plan, help the others raid the Marblewood safe, and leave Han to whatever Khazad-dûm decided to do with him. Neat and clean, with no need for Lando to dirty his own hands. And it would pretty much guarantee that he'd never have to worry about Han coming near him again. Han took a deep breath. No, Lando wouldn't do that to him. Not that way. Definitely not with Chewie breathing down his neck. He just had to wait. That was all. Just wait. Backing across the room to one of the beds, he settled down onto the floor behind it, slouching enough to put his eyes just above mattress level, where he could see the hallway but wouldn't be immediately visible himself unless whoever was passing took a careful look. Lando and the others would come up with something. He just needed to be ready when they did. Carefully, Lando settled their fake cryodex in its case and sealed it.
Everyone ready?
He asked, looking around the room. A chorus of affirmatives ran through the group. They certainly looked ready, Lando decided. Even with the brown floppy hat obscuring half her face, and the tension of anticipation lying before her, Tavia was stunning in her demure brown dress. Rochelle had moved her computer over to the window, ready to provide whatever support anyone needed, whether it involved data phishing or high-sky visual work. Winter and Dozer were dressed in outfits that wouldn't draw a second glance on the street, but which were tailored to allow ease of running, dodging, or shooting. Chewbacca, typically, just looked impatient to get going.
Okay, Lando said, carefully adjusting the edge of the nondescript silk tearaway jacket Zerba had made for him. Let's do this.
Hang on,
Inger called from down the hall. Lando turned, wondering irritably what the other man wanted now. He felt his mouth drop open. Inger had put on a long, dark blue coat, its upturned collar hiding much of the med seal that covered the right half of his face. Draped jauntily across his head was a wide burgundy beret with a side spray of drooping feathers at the lower edge that hid most of the rest.
What are you all dressed up for? Lando demanded.
I'm going with you, Inger said, his voice firm. It's my fault Han's in this mess. I'm not going to just sit here and do nothing.
What if Villator's people recognize you?
Tavia asked.
They won't,
Inger assured her.
And if they do?
Tavia persisted. Inger's single eye looked like something cut from flint as he slowly turned to face her.
Then you and Bink will have an extra bit of diversion to do, won't you?
Chewbacca growled and gestured impatiently toward the door.
Yes, and we don't have any to waste, Lando agreed reluctantly.
He didn't want Inger in there with him. But unless they threw binders on the man's wrists or ordered Rochelle to sit on him, there wasn't any practical way to keep him in the suite.
Fine. But, he leveled a finger, you'll stay in the background. Do only what one of us tells you to do, and will not make yourself a diversion of any kind. Understood?
Understood.
Inger smiled cynically.
After all, if Villator gets me, the 163 million suddenly shrinks to 800,000. Can't have that, can we?
Never mind the shrinkage, Lando growled. We know what we're doing. You don't. So stay out of the way.
Trust me, Inger said softly. I have no intention of dying today.
Good, Lando said. Because neither do the rest of us.
He took a deep breath.
All right, let's go.
There was another round of muted agreement as they all headed for the door. As he joined them, Lando felt a frown crease his forehead. It had been hard to tell through all the rest of their murmurings, but he could have sworn Winter had just said...
Winter?
He asked.
Yes,
she said, looking at him. Lando felt his lip twitch.
Nothing,
he said, and kept walking. Because, really, no one said, "May the Force be with us," anymore. No one but rebels and religious nuts. And if Winter was one of either group, he really didn't want to know about it.
Chapter 18.
Dozer settled the airspeeder down onto the rooftop landing area, half a block from the Lulina Crown Hotel, and cut the engine and lights.
In position,
Winter reported into her comlink. She listened a moment, then nodded.
Okay, let us know when.
She clicked off and put it away.
The others are heading in,
she told Dozer.
Lando will call when he wants us to make our move.
Dozer nodded, staring through the gathering darkness at the entrance to the Lulina Crown's airspeeder garage floor.
Great,
he muttered.
You ready for this?
Dozer clenched his teeth.
No,
he Criffingwell wasn't ready for this. And if Winter had any brains, she wouldn't be ready either. Because that was a Faline in there. A Faline. More than that, a Faline who'd already once brought Dozer to the edge of saying things he didn't want to say. And he'd done it just by smiling, asking nicely, and filling Dozer's lungs with biochemical poison. Dozer had always prided himself on being in control. Always.
Even when he was working for someone else, there were still important bits of freedom that he possessed and would never give up. He was the one who chose whether to obey questionable or dangerous orders. He was the one who decided when and how to close the deal he needed to close. He was the one who knew when he needed to stick with it and when he needed to bail. With the Fallen, he no longer had those freedoms. The Fallen could take all of them away from him. He looked sideways at Winter. She was gazing straight ahead at the garage entrance, but he knew she could feel his eyes on her. And there was no fear in her face. Nothing but calmness and determination. Dozer felt his lip twist. She was barely half his age. Certainly no more than half his size. But even she should be smart enough to be concerned about the odds of going up against a Black Sun official and his bodyguards. Maybe she was nervous. Maybe she just wasn't showing it. Or maybe she just didn't care. Maybe all she cared about was getting the job done. And Dozer would be damned if he let a half-baked girl show him up. In fact, come to think of it, the whole bunch of them had been pretty much ignoring him from the day this whole thing started. He'd been scheduled as front man, and then Calrissian had showed up and been handed the job. He'd expected to have to boost airspeeders, but Inger had just gone out and rented the things. Aside from the Z-95 and that other job Han had asked him to do, he'd basically done nothing to earn his slice of the pie except pass out bribes that everyone knew Villachor's people wouldn't even take. Well, that was going to change. He, Dozer Creed, was going to make Inger's $163 million look like pocket change. And when he did, the others would treat him with more respect. A lot more respect.
Yeah,
he growled to Winter.
I'm ready.
And to his mild surprise, he found that he actually meant it. A hissing curl of flame rolled past directly above them, like a flaming snake. Lando ducked reflexively, even though the fire was contained by a repulsor field and a good 2 meters above his head. Chewbacca, who was even closer to the flame, didn't even flinch. But then Chewbacca was seriously focused right now. Having seen him in that mood before, Lando was just as glad the Wookiee's focus wasn't on him. The fire blew past, and Chewbacca rumbled.
He's here,
Lando said.
Where?
Inger asked.
Over by the security station, at the south end of the children's play pavilion,
Lando told him. Inger grunted.
I'm a little surprised he was willing to meet you out in the open like this.
I wasn't offering him any choice, Lando said grimly. I doubt he's very happy about it.
We don't always get what we want,
Inger said philosophically.
Is Kazadi with him?
No sign of any Fallen, Lando reported. Okay, 10 more steps, and it'll be time for you and Chewie to break off and go find Bink.
Wait a minute,
Inger objected, frowning at Lando with his good eye.
I thought I was going with you.
I don't know where you got that idea. You're going with Chewie.
But...
And if you give either of us any static about it, he's gonna toss you over his shoulder and carry you out of here like a child throwing a tantrum. Clear?
Inger threw a look upward at Chewbacca.
Clear.
You came here to get hand out, Lando reminded him. That's Chewie's job, and I know he can use your help.
Chewbacca warbled his opinion of that. For once, Lando decided it would be best not to translate.
Me, I'm just delivering a package and then getting out, he said instead.
Which wasn't quite true either. Again, Inger didn't need to concern himself with the details. Chewbacca growled a warning.
Time to go. Lando said, underlining his order with a firm push against Inger's shoulder. Good luck.
With a curt nod, Inger veered off into the crowd, Chewbacca striding along behind him. Lando waited until the Wookiee was just ahead, bobbing along above the crowd, then pulled out his comlink.
Rochelle?
Looks like a total of 8 bodyguards in the clump, but there are at least 4 more security types loitering in the ring 20 meters out from the main group. There might be more that I haven't tagged.
Lando nodded.
He expected Villachor to come heavily prepared, and he'd been right.
Kazadi?
No sign of him. Villachor may be planning to take you inside for that part of the meeting.
I'm sure he is,
Lando said sourly. Going inside the mansion was what had gotten Han locked up, and Lando had no intention of offering Villachor a two-for-one special, especially given what he was wearing beneath his tearaway outfit.
Did Tavia make it in okay?
She's in, and hanging around the main flame geyser set up. Hold it. Yes, she's seen Chewbacca, starting to move southeast. Okay, I see Bink now, coming out of the drinks pavilion with Chakoa. Chewie and Tavia are drifting to intercept.
Good,
Lando said. He thought briefly about having Rochelle give Tavia a quick call to remind her about the newly tweaked timing, then decided against it. She and Chewbacca knew what they were doing, and Bink already knew to wait for their lead. As long as they didn't push it, the timing ought to be all right.
Okay, I'm going in. How's the north end of the children's pavilion look?
Clear, as far as I can tell. But I can't tag all of Villachor's people from here. Watch yourself.
I will. Don't forget, odds are Villachor hasn't spread my face around too widely. Not even to his whole security force.
That may be what your calculations tell you. Me, I'm not so sure.
I'll be fine. I've got those squeaker charges from Kel's back. If worse comes to worse, I can start tossing them around and try to get away in the confusion.
Just don't make it too confusing. The last thing we want right now is a full-blown panic.
I know. I'll check in again after I make the drop.
The children's pavilion was easy to identify, full of colorful play equipment and bursting with excited shouts and laughter. Lando approached the north end cautiously, but didn't see any hard-eyed men hanging around. Through the maze of colorful climbing and play structures, he caught occasional glimpses of Villachor and his clump of guards, waiting for Lando at the south end, where Lando had told them to wait. Villachor wasn't going to be happy about being stood up this way, but people didn't always get what they wanted. As he walked past the pavilion, he dropped the case casually inside the northwest corner's vertical support pillar. He walked for another minute, weaving in and out of traveling clumps of people, at one point slipping through a double line as they moved back and forth between one of the flame fountains and the drink pavilion. Only then did he pull out his comlink and punch in Villachor's number. The other man answered promptly.
Villachor!
Quirv,
Lando identified himself.
The package is waiting for you at the northwest corner of the children's pavilion.
There was a brief pause.
I thought we were going to have a face-to-face discussion, like civilized gentlemen.
No,
Lando agreed.
My boss decided there wasn't really anything more we needed to say to each other right now. He also wants to know when we can expect his other employee to be released.
After we've checked out the device. And if it isn't where you say, or if there happens to be an explosion when we open it, I promise you his only release will come from a very slow death.
There won't be any explosions,
Lando promised, wincing. Chewie's plan for getting Han out had better work.
My boss told me to tell you in turn that if any of his people are harmed, you'll be the one who'll die very slowly.
I'm sure he did,
Villachor said with deceptive calmness.
Tell him I'm looking forward to meeting him someday.
Someday,
Lando promised, trying to match the other's tone.
Enjoy the package. We'll look forward to seeing our friend soon.
When it happened all at once. 1 minute, the hall outside Han's room was as dead as a Hutt's list of friends. The next, it was suddenly hosting a parade. Keeping as low as he could, he watched as 6 humans and 3 Fallen went marching past. One of the Fallen dressed like he was getting an Imperial citation. The other Fallen and the humans armed right up to their collarbones. Somewhere out there, Lando had apparently delivered the cryodex. He waited until the procession had passed, and gave them another minute after that just to make sure. Then, easing up out of his slouch, he headed silently to the door. A quick check in both directions showed that the hallway was again deserted. Trying to watch both directions at once, he headed back toward the central section of the mansion. There wasn't much he could do yet, he knew. Not until the plan kicked off in earnest. With no weapons, allies, or comlink, all he could do was find a place to go to ground for a while. Fortunately, having had some time to think about it, he'd come up with the ideal spot. Only the major rooms on Rochelle's schematics had been labeled, but her analysis of this particular second-floor cluster of small rooms had suggested they were probably a security station. At the moment, with the Marblewood guard contingent stretched thin, it stood to reason that the smaller substations were likely to be deserted. The main security room part of the cluster, where the equipment and weapons were probably stored, was solidly locked. But the lounge area to the side was open and empty. Best of all, it was conveniently located right down the hall from the main guard's quarters and ready room, the room right over the junior ballroom. The room where, if all went according to plan, the team would be assembling to breach the vault. There was a good chance, Han knew, that no one would disturb him until the unexpected entertainment Cal and Zerba had arranged started up outside. But just in case someone did... The lounge turned out to be stocked with plenty of snack foods and bottles of water, fruit juices, and calf drinks. Finding a tray, Han took it to the sideboard and loaded half the drink bottles and half the bowl of fruit onto it. Then, positioning himself with his back to the door, he slid the hanger he'd taken from his closet holding cell into his belt where it would be handy. A roving guard would probably be instantly suspicious of a stranger wandering the mansion's hallways. He wouldn't be nearly so suspicious of a simple worker who had come to restock the snack selection. With luck, he'd remain unsuspicious long enough for Han to get in the first shot. Eyeing the snacks, wondering if it would look suspicious if a guard caught one of the food service workers eating on the job, Han settled in to wait. Deja was still circling the grounds, looking in vain for the rest of Inger's team, when he finally spotted one of them. Not that the discovery was anything to be especially proud of. The Wookiee towered over all the humans and most of the other aliens mixed into the crowd, tall enough, in fact, that he and the others of his species were probably in danger of being singed by some of the lower flowing fire exhibits. He was heading northwest, Deja saw, striding through the crowd with a determination that confirmed he wasn't just aimlessly enjoying the show. Smiling tightly, Deja plotted himself an intercept-slash-tracking course and headed off to see what the Wookiee was up to. He'd gotten four steps when a hard object abruptly jabbed into his ribs, bringing him to an equally sudden stop.
"Well, well," a voice murmured in his ear. "About time you showed your face."
Deja swallowed a curse. In all that had happened over the past few days, he'd nearly forgotten that voice.
"Hello, Krovendiff," he said casually. "Enjoying the show?"
"Enjoying it a lot more now," Krovendiff growled. "Master Villachor's been all up on my back, wanting more of that glitter stim you foisted off on me. Only you never showed. Anywhere."
"I've been busy," Deja said, looking casually over his shoulder. If he could twist himself out of Krovendiff's line of fire, he should be able to take him down quietly enough that the crowd flowing around them wouldn't even notice. Unfortunately, that lack of awareness probably wouldn't extend to the two Marblewood security men watching him from a few meters away. He'd tagged Krovendiff as too stupid or too careless to secure backup before confronting a potentially dangerous subject. Clearly, he'd underestimated the man. "I trust Master Villachor found the sample intriguing?"
"I don't know," Krovendiff said. "What say we go ask him?"
He pressed the blaster harder into Deja's side.
"Right now."
Villachor had been glowering across the children's pavilion for nearly 2 minutes, planning in exquisite detail exactly what he would do to his prisoner if Kurv was lying, when confirmation finally came.
"They've got it," Manning announced quietly,
leaning a little closer to his comlink clip.
Same case he brought in before.
The same case? Did that also mean the same booby trap?
Did they open it?
No, sir,
Manning said.
They're taking it to the guard room,
where Dempsey and his bomb-scanning equipment were already set up.
Good.
Villachor glanced around, half expecting to see Quirv watching him from the fringe of the crowd. But the man was nowhere to be seen.
Back inside. Alert His Excellency that we should have the cryodex in the southwest foyer within minutes.
He's already there,
Manning said uncomfortably.
Bromley says he looks impatient.
Villachor swallowed a curse. Of course Kazadi was impatient. He wanted someone dead. But at least that someone wouldn't be Villachor. Not once he proved that Quirv really had shown him a cryodex. Though why Quirv had given it up so easily still bothered him. Was their prisoner worth that much to his boss? Or was there something else still going on beneath the surface?
Do you want us to go after him, sir?
Taub asked.
Or shall we send out a full alert? We have Quirv's description.
But not his face,
Villachor growled. Taub winced.
No, sir.
Villachor shifted his glare to the sky above him. Cursed useless cam droids, and the techs still hadn't figured out why they couldn't take decent pictures.
Forget it, he decided.
His two bodyguards and Chikoa were the only ones who'd actually seen the man. And right now, he needed all three of them to stay exactly where they were.
There's no serious damage he could do out here. Not now.
He gestured to the other security men.
The rest of you, return to your patrol areas,
he said, raising his voice over the noise of the crowd.
And keep your eyes open.
Someone else, even another crime lord, might have expressed his impatience by pacing back and forth across the foyer. But Vigo's didn't pace. At least this one didn't. Kazadi was standing perfectly still as Villachor and his two bodyguards walked in through the doorway, his eyes cold as he stared at and through Villachor.
The cryodex is in our hands, Your Excellency,
Villachor announced.
It's being checked for traps as we speak.
And this Master Quirv?
Kazadi asked.
He skipped the meeting and left the case in a different spot,
Villachor said.
He's probably already left the grounds.
Without his companion?
A hint of an icy smile touched Kazadi's lips.
I think not. Alert your guards to watch the doors carefully. Sooner or later, he'll attempt to enter the mansion.
The guards are already on alert,
Villachor said, trying not to scowl. He didn't need a Vigo to tell him how to run his own territory.
The doors are quite secure.
Good,
Kazadi said.
I wish to see this alleged cryodex. How soon until the check is complete?
Across the foyer, the guardroom door opened, and Dempsey emerged, his gait an ominous mixture of urgency and reluctance. He was holding the cryodex in front of him in both hands, as if it were a priceless work of art.
I would say it's complete right now,
Villachor said, beckoning to Dempsey.
Bring it here, he called. I gather there were no explosives.
Dempsey's eyes flicked to Kazadi, but instead of answering, he merely picked up his pace. Villachor felt a stirring of fresh anger. He wasn't accustomed to having his questions ignored.
I asked if there were any explosives.
No explosives, Master Villachor,
Dempsey said as he came to a jerky halt a few meters away from the group. He seemed now to be trying very hard not to look at Kazadi.
But there was a trap. A pressurized gas canister set to explode in a cloud spray pattern when the case was opened.
So Quirv had had one last lethal trick up his sleeve. He and his people would pay dearly for that.
What kind of gas?
I'll need to take the canister back to my lab to run a proper chemical analysis, Dempsey said. But the label...
His tongue swiped across his upper lip.
The label identified it as White Fealgine.
A violent hiss exploded from somewhere in Kazadi's group, a sound unlike anything Villator had ever heard before. He jerked in reaction, twisting around to look. He thought he'd seen Kazadi angry before. He'd been wrong. This was what an angry Faline looked like.
"Your Excellency," he asked cautiously. "You will find this human Quarf and bring him to me,"
Kazadi said, in a voice that sent a shiver through Villator's body.
"Then you will find everyone in his organization and bring them to me as well." "I understand, Your Excellency,"
Villator said, wishing like hell that he did. He spun back to Dempsey.
"What in the galaxy is White Fieldjine?"
"It's a poison,"
Dempsey said, visibly shaking now,
"that only kills Faline."
Villator stared at him, feeling the blood draining from his face. In a single heartbeat, this had gone from business rivalry to something bitterly personal. Quirv was dead, all right. So was everyone in his organization, and probably everyone his organization had ever dealt with. And unless Villator nailed the son of a Sith, and fast, he very likely would join them.
"I see," he managed. "Well, I..."
He broke off again, as the door behind him suddenly opened. He spun around, half expecting to see Quirv and a heavily armed assault team charging in to rescue their comrade. But it was only two of his security team, Becker and Tarish, standing in the doorway, an unknown man wearing field binders pressed between them.
"What?"
he snarled.
"Someone outside named Krovendiff told us to bring him to you, sir,"
Becker said, his professional demeanor cracking as he picked up on the tension shimmering across the foyer.
He said it's the man who gave him the glitterstim sample a few days ago."
Villator felt a trickle of relief. Finally, some good news, and the timing couldn't have been better.
"You asked for Quirv's organization, Your Excellency," he said, motioning them in. "Here's the first of them."
"Really?"
Kazadi said, eyeing the newcomer. His brief burst of rage had apparently ended, Villator noted uneasily. With Faline, he knew, that could be a bad sign. Or a very bad sign.
"Bring him to me,"
Kazadi beckoned to Dempsey.
"And the Cryodex."
Villator nodded confirmation of the order. Becker and Tarish walked their prisoner over to Kazadi, stopping a few meters away as two of the Faline's bodyguards intercepted them and silently but firmly took the man into their own custody. At the same time, Dempsey walked gingerly over to the group and likewise handed the Cryodex to one of Kazadi's Faline, who in turn handed it to Kazadi.
"As you could see, Your Excellency, it's indeed a Cryodex,"
Villator said, watching as Kazadi studied the instrument.
"And as I also told you, my sole intent was to draw out him and his organization."
"What is this?"
Kazadi snarled, his rage suddenly back again.
"Where did you get this?"
He sent the prisoner a laser-edged glare.
"Where did you get this?"
he demanded.
"I don't know,"
the prisoner protested, wincing back from the Faline's fury.
"Whoever these people are, I'm not with them."
Abruptly, Kazadi took a long step forward and slapped the man hard across his face. He staggered back, only the guard's grips preventing him from toppling onto the stone floor.
"Your Excellency, what is it?"
Villator asked carefully. Kazadi turned vicious eyes on him.
"This is not some random Cryodex,"
he bit out.
"This is Azeel's. Azeel's!"
"Azeel's?" Villator echoed, thoroughly confused now.
"He has his own..."
And in a sudden horrible rush, he understood. Azeel didn't have the key codes to a Cryodex that Kazadi kept in his suite, the way Kazadi had told him. He never had. Instead, Azeel was the keeper of the Cryodex itself. But if this was Azeel's Cryodex, then Quirv's offer to copy the blackmail files...
He caught his breath. It was impossible.
For an aide to a Black Sun Vigo to even think about betrayal was utterly impossible. And yet there it was, handed to them by Quirv himself. Azeel's Cryodex. or something that looked like Azeel's cryodex.
It has to be a copy, he said into the taut silence. A forgery!
How?
Kazadi demanded.
There are marks on the back that only his cryodex has. Marks that no one else would ever see. Certainly that no one else would ever notice. Why would they have been included?
I don't know, Villachor said. But it has to be a trick. Because if it's really Lord Azeel's cryodex...
He broke off, realizing he didn't dare say it. Kazadi had no such compunctions.
Then Azeel is a traitor, he said quietly. And so perhaps are you.
No,
Villachor said quickly, possibly too quickly.
If I were planning something with Lord Azeel, he and I would hardly need to go through all this complication. I could have given him the files long ago.
Perhaps you did, Kazadi said. Perhaps this was merely your preferred method of drawing my interest to this matter, and then arranging my death.
He lifted the cryodex slightly.
Certainly, once I was dead, it would be unlikely that the true ownership of this device could ever be proven.
Villachor felt his stomach tighten. The whole thing was utterly insane. But a Black Sun Vigo didn't need courtroom-level proof to make decisions and pass judgments. He could do it purely on his own suspicions.
But I don't think poison suits your style,
Kazadi continued.
If not you, perhaps one of your men has been acting in collusion with the traitor.
Villachor's first impulse was to deny it. His men were loyal, hand-screened by Shikoa himself. His second impulse was to keep his mouth firmly shut. If Kazadi's threat of death was pointed at someone else, it wouldn't be pointed at him. Kazadi knew that, too.
I see you don't deny the possibility, he commented.
Unfortunately, anything is possible, Your Excellency,
Villachor said, choosing his words carefully.
Before today, I would have said all of my men were unquestionably loyal to Black Sun. Now, he shook his head.
Yes,
Kazadi said, the word coming out as a snake's hiss.
You've removed all human guards from the vault, as I ordered?
Yes, Your Excellency,
Villachor confirmed. At the time, he thought the order dangerously stupid. Now he was very glad he'd obeyed it.
And I checked the vault after they left. The data cards were still in place.
He nodded at the prisoner, who'd pulled himself mostly back to his feet and was sagging between his guards.
What do you want me to do with him?
I will deal with him,
Kazadi said, eyeing the man coolly.
You say you aren't with these people, human?
I've never even heard of this Quirv person,
the man said, his voice strained, his breathing shallow and rapid.
Or this Azeel, or a cryodex, or any of the rest of it. I just have a good source of glitter stim, and I'm looking for someone to distribute it for me. I even brought another sample. He's got it right there.
He started to lift one hand to point to Becker, and gave a strangled gasp as Kazadi's guard bent his arm against the elbow joint.
I'm not with them,
the prisoner moaned.
I swear...
For another moment, Kazadi stared at him. The man squirmed under the Faline's gaze, avoiding his eyes, looking like he was on the verge of tears. A far cry from the arrogant, overconfident drug dealer Krovendiff had described, Villachor thought contemptuously.
Take him to my quarters, Kazadi said at last. What was he carrying?
A comlink, a holocamera, and a small vial, Becker said. Maybe the glitter stim... No weapons.
Bring them here.
Again, Becker glanced at Villachor for confirmation, then stepped forward and handed the items to one of the men holding the prisoner.
Take those to my quarters as well,
Kazadi ordered.
Wait for me there.
We obey, Your Excellency,
one of the guards said. He nudged the prisoner, and the three of them headed toward the service turbolift at the rear of the foyer. Kazadi watched them go, then turned to one of his four remaining human guards.
Take 2 others and my airspeeders, and position yourselves in observation sites around the Lulina Crown Hotel, he ordered. I'll order Lord Azeel to bring his cryotex here. If Mr. Villachor is right, and this is merely some clever copy, he'll answer this summons without hesitation or fear. He looked at Villachor. If Master Villachor is wrong, and this is indeed Azeel's cryodex, he will attempt to run. By his own actions, he will be condemned.
The guard bowed.
I obey, Your Excellency, he said.
Pulling out his comlink, he strode briskly from the foyer, heading in the direction of the garage.
May I offer the assistance of my own security forces?
Villachor asked hesitantly.
Are there any you can trust with your life?
Kazadi countered. Under the circumstances, Villachor knew what the correct answer had to be.
No,
he conceded.
Then your men may not help,
Kazadi said.
I'll let you know the results of my interrogations in due time.
He turned and headed toward the stairs, the 2 Fallen and 3 humans forming a moving box around him. Villachor watched him go, a hollow sensation in the pit of his stomach. In the nearly 3 weeks since Kazadi and his entourage had arrived, he'd seen the Fallen's guards take up such an obviously defensive formation only on the rare occasions when they moved from the safety of the mansion out onto the grounds. Clearly, Kazadi no longer felt safe inside Villachor's home. Villachor could hardly blame him. If the cryodex was a fake, how had it been done? If it was real, what could possibly have possessed Azeel to make this insane bid for power? Unless Querv's people hadn't been targeting only Villachor. Maybe they'd been working both sides. Azeel for his cryodex, Villachor for the files themselves. Or perhaps there was no treason at all. After all, he had only Kazadi's word that Querv's cryodex was identical to Azeel's. Could this be Kazadi's way of painting Villachor with the suspicion of treason? If so, there was likely nothing he could do about it. He was a sector chief. Kazadi was a Vigo. Whether Azeel was genuinely a traitor or whether Kazadi was manipulating non-existent evidence to implicate Villachor, it was one side's word against the other's. And there was no doubt at all which of them Prince Shizor would believe. Suddenly, a deal with the Imperials was looking better and better.
Sir, Taub said.
Villachor snapped out of his dark thoughts, fresh determination flooding through him. He wasn't going to go running off to Lord Dishul, Darth Vader, or even the Emperor himself. He was going to stand his ground and fight for the power and territory that he'd worked so hard to build. The power and territory that were rightfully his. How could he even have thought about giving in? And then he realized how he could have thought about it, and he bared his teeth in a vicious snarl. Curse Kazadi and his Fallen pheromones anyway.
Sir!
Taub repeated more urgently.
What?
Villachor snapped.
I'm getting reports of a commotion outside,
the bodyguard said urgently.
What kind of commotion?
Kazadi's voice wafted across the room. Villachor turned around. The Fallen and his guard had paused near the foot of the stairway and were looking back at Villachor and the others. Villachor turned back to Taub, and cursed Taub and his big mouth, too.
You heard him. What kind of commotion?
It appears...
Taub frowned and leaned closer to his comlink clip.
It appears that some of the droids are... going crazy.
The sky was darkening, and Bink was wondering if something had gone wrong, when she finally spotted Chewbacca drifting casually toward them. She breathed a quiet sigh of relief. Shakoa's comlink clip had been spitting out new orders or updates every few minutes for the past hour, and though she couldn't hear any of them distinctly as she nestled against his side, she could tell by his facial muscles and body tension that something wasn't going well in Villachor's little corner of paradise. The fact that Shakoa apparently was ignoring the updates in favor of continuing to wander the crowds and pretending to enjoy Bink's prattle confirmed that Bink was still his current assignment. Which was, of course,
exactly how she wanted it. Chewie was moving closer, his attention apparently on something off to the side. Bink hadn't seen Tavia yet, but she had no doubt her sister was moving up behind her, exactly as she was supposed to. Casually, she extricated her right hand from Shakoa's left arm, reaching up to brush a lock of hair out of her eyes, and taking the opportunity for one last visual check of the finger snips fastened all but invisibly beneath her nails. They were set and ready to go. Out of the corner of her eye, she spotted Chewbacca moving in from her left. And suddenly, there he was, angling sideways straight into her as he looked at something off to his own left. Bink jerked away from the big furry wall bearing down on her and ducked sideways in front of Shakoa. She pivoted around to face him as she continued her evasive motion, her left hand clutching at Shakoa's shoulder, her right pressed briefly against his upper chest as she breathed a startled and panicky gasp into his face. As she continued around to his other side, the finger snips on her right hand deftly cut through the small chain connecting the key pendant to the choker around his neck. The fingertip-sized glazed stone dropped into her hand, and as she palmed it, she continued on to Shakoa's right side, grabbing his right arm with both hands, which was his gun hand, which he'd already warned her not to grab. Sure enough, before she could even get her feet planted, his forearm lurched reflexively up and back, throwing off her hands and sending her falling backward into the flowing mass of people behind her. She half turned as someone grabbed her, caught a glimpse of brown dress and floppy hat and Tavia's face. As the two of them spun around, fighting for balance against Bink's momentum, Bink's flailing right hand came up beneath the brim of Tavia's hat, flipping it back and off her sister's head. As the hat sailed up into the air, Bink's left hand slipped into a fold of her skirt and caught hold of Zerba's magic egg. She squeezed the activator, and in the blink of an eye, as the two of them toppled to the ground, Bink's red silk dress was ripped instantly away into the egg, leaving her dressed in a duplicate of Tavia's brown dress, as Tavia's brown dress similarly vanished to reveal the copy of Bink's red one. Their twirling movement as they fell had landed Bink on the bottom of the two-woman heap. Tavia was off her in an instant, rolling away so as to give Bink the necessary freedom of movement to flip over onto her stomach and get her face turned away from Shakoa. She finished the roll, then got her hands under her and pushed herself shakily up onto her knees. A second later, half a dozen hands closed around her arms, another half dozen grabbed Tavia's, and a moment later, both women were back on their feet. Standing behind her,